Hello, patrons. Welcome. We're talking grammar.
This week in grammar.
We've talked about grammar fewer than three times before we recorded.
I'm going to go out of my way to say less. Did I tell you my favorite one about the difference between was and were in a conditional sentence? Mm-mm. Oh, this one's fabulous. This is correct. If I were 20 years younger, I would date that young man. This is incorrect. If I were to go to the party, I would wear my yellow dress. Mm. If the thing you're saying is presumed to be true, it's if I was. If it's presumed to be false, if it were.
Oh, you know what? It's not fewer and less than. It's over and more than.
Oh, no. Fewer and less than is still?
Fewer and less than is still okay. Yeah. Like, it still should be distinguished. Last week, I was at the American Copy Editors. One of the highlights for me is the session, two editors of the AP style book, and that over can now be used for more than.
Oh, I didn't even know that was one I should be upset about.
This is an AP style rule change from 2014. Yeah, so it wasn't fewer and less than. Fewer and less than still stands. It's over and more than, and that one gets me.
I didn't even know
actually,
that one.
I didn't even know that. What's the over?
You're not supposed to say over $20 because it's not over anything.
It's supposed to be
more than $20. But AP changed the style and said, you know what? It's fine. Everybody knows what it means. Living language.
Deal.
From the language that brought you oversight, which means something you missed, and oversee, which means paying attention.
That's why I try not to get too angry about any of this stuff, is there's so many things in our language that 100 years ago were wrong that we actually enforce now as rules because it's changed.
Hey, but did you catch the subtlety of my favorite grammar rule?
No, what was it?
So you say if it was, or something that's presumed to be true.
Okay.
If it were, is something presumed to be false.
Ah.
So if I were 20 years younger, I would date that young man. Well, it's presumed to be false. I'm not really going to be 20 years younger. But if I was to go to the party, I would wear my yellow dress.
Right, because it's
presumed to be true.
Yeah.
So something that could be true didn't necessarily, like you. Right. It's not like you were going to the party. Mm-hmm. Was going to the party. Was going.
Isn't that awesome?
Very subtle. We need to get grammar.
So if I were a spirit haunting you from the grave versus I was a spirit, because that could also be untrue. No, it could be true.
If I were to drink all the tea in China,
I would bother you about that grammar rule.
If I were to drink all the tea in China, if I was to drink all the whiskey in the house.
Now we boiled it down to something that he can understand.
I can wrap my head around it.
So a little me would not die inside if it weren't for the fact that sometimes, no, if it wasn't for the fact that sometimes you don't put about at the end. Let's start with a few tech things you should know. And then I'm just kind of happy and peaceful. And then I hear about and my jaw clenches.
You know what, though? I as much as I'm poking fun at you for that, I'm going to change it in the template. Because you know why? It's
about
not that I care
know.
About... that's not what I was gonna say, Roger.
What did he say?
He said, I said, it's not that I care about it. Roger says, your opinion. It's not that I care about the preposition at the end. It's that the about just makes the sentence longer than it needs to be. It's one of my principles of editing is if you can say the thing in fewer words, say it in fewer words.
That's why I used to do 5,000 word blog posts every week.
And then it doesn't make Allison have to die even a little bit.
Even a little bit. I appreciate it.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know of.
No.
Oh, man.
How about, well, you know, yeah, the way you have it now works.
Yeah. Like and that's a much more efficient way of saying it. And that's a good rule. That's a rule that transcends usage. If you can say it in fewer words, say it.
Yeah. And then I thought it said Broll of Musk starting X.com.
Oh, B-roll, yeah. B-roll. I'll make that italicized so that we don't read it.
Oh. Okay.
That's in scripts. You don't properly hyphenate things because you don't have time. And everybody knows that Broll means B-roll.
I've never seen that before.
You use parentheses and other
other ways of distinguishing it.
Hmm. I'm glad to see the hyphen between foundation and lead. The Linux Foundation led Hyperledger. I got in a fight with the style guide people at Raytheon because they changed something I wrote to take out the hyphen that should be there like that.
Yeah.
And they said, no, our style guide says there shouldn't be. It's like, you don't just get to make up new rules.
Now, some people say I should have hyphenated Linux and Foundation. And I'm like, no, it's not its name. Linux Foundation.
It's called the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, you don't hyphenate that.
Yeah.
But I've had people argue that you have to, if there's a two-word name leading up to the hyphen, you have to hyphenate all the words. And I'm like, not in a title, you don't.
Yeah.
That wouldn't make
sense. I get a little
sense.
Exhausted when I have to do a lot of hyphens. Like,
yeah.
The mother-in-law led Linux Foundation.
The Linux Mother-in-Law Foundation. Linus Torvalds mother-in-law led. Hyperledger. Oh, and I know you know this, but I'm just making sure. The red stuff we move through fast. Quick.
Yeah. I think you had somebody on recently who talked for like 3 minutes on one of those, and I'm like, no, don't you know? You're
sometimes it happens. Yeah. The muse takes you. I'm not going to be like, no, quiet.
I think it'd be funny if you did.
Well, I might do it to Veronica, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, someday I hope to be that comfortable that you'll be obnoxious to me. I don't know whether this would fit in or not, but a lot of times on the show, Scott has talked about how Microsoft is all about creatives and how he wished he had a real version of Photoshop on an iPad and how this doesn't work and all this stuff. So I bought him a copy of Affinity Photo for iPad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Actually, I think I bought him for the Mac and the iPad so he could play with it.
Oh, just I wonder what he'll think of it. That's really cool.
Just to shut him up.
Yeah, I want to hear what he thought. Well, it might work. Might make him happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it'd be fun. It'd be interesting to see what he said. Yeah, they also have Affinity Designer for the Mac, and it's really cool.
The Affinity is the new hotness. It's smart of Affinity. I mean, basically, what Affinity noticed was like, hey, I bet we can get a lot of people to use our product if we did it this way, because that's a complaint.
Yeah.
It's smart. Yep.
By the way, the company is actually Serif Labs.
Right.
But and I Affinity often just brand. Affinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody will give you a hard time.
Except
for me.
All right. Make sure nothing broke while we were sitting here. New details emerge.
Details.
Don't make me go look at the news.
New details emerge. Collusion.
I want to make a collusion calendar.
All right. Net neutrality day of action tomorrow. We know that. We're actually got a way to mention that. Geeks Doing Good 2017 from Patrick Rothfuss. That's nice. Prime Day. I'm not covering Prime Day.
You what? You don't want to be an advertiser?
Yeah. I don't cover the sale, you know, down the street at Ralph's either. So
you should. They got some pies
on
sale.
There's a pro and con thing down at the bottom that I wasn't contributing there.
Where were you?
Was I? Did I screw that up?
Where were you putting your pros and cons?
Oh, on line 30.
But on line 30, it's also on line 65. Did somebody copy it down there?
Oh, it must have just got copied by mistake.
Okay. If you scroll too quickly, sometimes you might accidentally paste in the in Google Sheets.
Well, but it's not even spelt the same.
Well, now it's gone.
No, it is misspelled the same. Two N's in resentment, Allison.
Where was I? Oh yeah.
Checking to see what broke.
Twitter has a new CFO. That's something we might want to mention. Game of Thrones language course. Wirelessly charging laptop from Dell? Oh, please, just stop making things that are interesting happen right at 125. Come on. All right. Dell Latitude 7285, the world's first wirelessly charging laptop, is now on sale. But its charging capabilities will have to be added at an additional cost. More pricing and details available later. Okay. I think Dell said today the Latitude is available for sale. I was starting it. What? Oh, I think they posted and then updated without removing. Wireless charging keyboard, wireless charging mat. I don't know. What do you guys think? Are you excited by that?
No.
No? Okay.
It might be exciting when a lot of people do it.
Might go into headlines tomorrow.
No.
Twitter has a new CFO, Ned Segal, a longtime Goldman Sachs banker who was most recently the senior vice president of finance at Intuit. Maybe. Twitter has hired longtime Goldman Sachs banker and former Intuit CFO Ned Segal as Twitter's new CFO, taking over from Anthony Noto, who was promoted to COO last November. All right.
Hey, it's 1:27. Does the stream start? I noticed that incredibly precise schedule.
Normally.
Hold on. Before you do anything, let me pop in the new thing.
Hyperledger, PayPal. You know what? I'm going to take away the Ubuntu thing.
All right.
Oh, man. I was going to run and go do it.
You should. No reason you shouldn't. All right, so first story is now different, Roger.
Cool. Let me copy and paste. Computer, it's so old. It's not old. It's just the modern era. Modern demands have finally caught up with it.
So I can, like, shrink up Slack right now, right? No more slacking is going to happen during the show?
I mean, no, not from me. Sometimes Roger uses it to alert us of things, but
it's probably better
to do it in the chat room because that's okay. Where my eyes will be. So
Tom, there's a giant spider behind you.
Oh, Roger. All right. Let's
see. Imagine I'm just telling you something like duck.
You know, that's my April Fool's joke.
There's a giant duck behind you.
Is there a giant duck behind me?
That's actually a goose.
My April Fool's joke every year. This started with my sister, and I now carry on the tradition with my poor wife. Is there's a spider on your shoulder?
See, I can't do that because I once actually had a spider on my head that was crawling around.
You can still do it. There's no law that says because you once had a spider on your head.
And I thought she was full of it, and it came down my shoulders like
My brother told me once that the only thing he would never lie to me about was whether there was a black fly on my head, because black flies bite.
Okay.
And so whenever we'd be out in the lake in Michigan, if there's a black fly on your head, you had to tell the person because they had to go on water real quick.
Yeah.
When he was about 30, he told me, oh, yeah, I was lying about that, too. I was just like to watch you go underwater.
Wait, so how does going in the water help?
Gets the fly
off. The fly stays up.
Oh, flies away. You just can't squash it.
All right. We got to do the show, Roger. We'll explain how flies work afterwards.
All right, I need a control and I'm hiding.
Oh, shoot.
Cliffhanger.
Cliff notes.
Okay, there we go. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by you, not advertisers. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Allison Sheridan from NosillaCast alongside to talk about technology, news, and issues of importance. Allison, how are you?
I'm excited to be here. I just love talking tech and love talking tech with you. Nothing better than that.
And we're going to talk about subscription versus ownership of software and come down definitively on only one side, right?
Absolutely. And ownership is in quotes because it's not really ownership either.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the secret, right? And no, obviously, sometimes subscription is better, sometimes ownership is better. But we're going to talk about when and how it might be different. It might change, depend on different people coming into the marketplace. But let's start with a few tech things you should know. Twitter just hired longtime Goldman Sachs banker and former Intuit CFO Ned Segal as Twitter's new CFO. He'll take over from Anthony Noto, who's been doing all the jobs, it seems like. Noto was promoted from CFO to COO last November.
So does this mean they're going to make money now?
Yes, that is exactly what Ned Siegel is hoping it means.
All right. Elon Musk and PayPal have confirmed that PayPal let Musk buy back X.com, the URL Musk bought, brought to PayPal in 2000. In a tweet about it, Musk said the domain has great sentimental value.
So is he going to use it for something or is he just collecting it? I could see it either way, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He could just collect it, right?
He might just be like, yeah, you know what? I had $600,000 or whatever. We don't know how much he paid for it. Lay it around. Why not? The Linux Foundation-led Hyperledger project has released its first blockchain code that can be used by large businesses to build software. This is the project that has more than 150 engineers from 29 organizations, a bunch of banks, a bunch of tech companies, Cisco engineers, people working on that project. So here we go. We'll see if it can actually make things more efficient and cost less for banks.
So the idea of blockchain in this context is to try to allow secure communications where you know exactly what's going on with the money.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, Hyperledger, right? They're using it for all the things that a ledger is used for, recording transactions, communicating transactions, executing transfers, all of that sort of thing. But it's the information. They're not starting a cryptocurrency or anything like that.
Okay. All right. In an act of irony, AT&T will join tomorrow's Internet Day of Action by displaying banners supporting a free and open internet. This is remarkable since the Day of Action is meant to express support for maintaining the 2015 open internet guidelines, which AT&T has worked to get overturned.
This is like the forestry company joining the Save the Spotted Owl protest. Like, well, we want to save the spotted owl. And everyone's like, yeah, then stop cutting down the trees. They're like, well, we're going to cut down the trees, but maybe we can come up with another way of saving the spotted owl.
Oh, geez.
I'm not sure what they're up to there, but it's very interesting. Microsoft is outlining a program to take unused television spectrum. That's what you hear talked about as white spaces. It's the space between television channels in most cases, and use it to provide high-speed internet service in rural areas of the United States. Plan aims to cover 2 million people in 12 states over the next 5 years. There are a lot of people who need this. Around 23 million people in the U.S. have no access to fast internet, mostly in rural areas. Separately, TechDirt has an article out pointing out a study commissioned by the broadband industry, so you can guess this is going to be somewhat conservative, had economists from CMA Strategy Consulting and Economist Incorporated finding more than 10.6 million U.S. households have no access to wired internet service with download speeds of at least 25 megabits per second. That is the FCC definition of fast. And an additional 46.1 million households live in areas with just one provider offering those speeds. So 50 million people in the U.S. have either zero or one option for 25 megabit per second speed or more.
Well, Tom, that was a lot of numbers. And I don't understand how Microsoft is saying 23 million people have no access to fast internet, but this commission says it's closer to, what, 50?
23 million people have no access to fast internet. More than 10.6 million people have no access to wired internet service.
Oh, okay. Okay. So fast internet could be Wi-Fi or cellular.
Well, and I don't know how Microsoft is defining fast. But basically they're saying there's 23 million people in the U.S. in rural areas that need our help. So we're going to use white space to cover that. And the TechDirt story is saying there's a lot of people who have no choice or don't even have access to the minimal level of fast internet. My guess is Microsoft's defining fast internet as faster than 25 megabits per second.
Now, I know that they have not actually, they're going to be talking about this today in more detail and actually outlining it, but I don't quite understand how internet fits between TV channels. Do you know much about that? Like,
on broadcast television, yeah, it's not about cable, it's about wireless broadcast. Like, between channel 6 and 7, there's space. The FCC, when they allocated channels, left space between the channels to prevent interference. Now,
that was part of the digital change?
No. Well, yes and no. Digital change doesn't matter. When they allocate space to channels, they left space between the channels, and they always have.
Okay.
And what a lot of companies, including Microsoft, have been saying is, we can make use of that space between the channels without causing interference. Let us do that.
Okay. And I think that without causing interference might be because of the digital thing. I think when you've got analog, it sort of bleeds into each other. And so it might have enabled this a little more.
I don't know that's the case. It's still spectrum. Spectrum is spectrum. I think just technology in general has gotten better at limiting bleed over.
Okay. All right.
You may be right. Well, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think the bleed over is caused by the broadcast, not the content of the broadcast, because the broadcast is still radio waves, whether it's digital or analog.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that will be fun to see. And I think that's can only be a good thing, right? Because that's a big problem. I would be really sad. That's why I live in the middle of Los Angeles and not out in the middle of Wyoming.
Well, and my, you know, my sister, I talk about my sister a lot when these rural things come up, because, you know, she's the closest person to me that has this issue. But she lives out on a farm and they've been able to get better service over the years. But it's something she struggled with because she's not right by all the cables that get laid by the phone company or the cable company.
Yeah, I don't understand those people with all that fresh air and nonsense. So.
Cows, chickens.
Exercise. Anyway, all right. Facebook is going to extend the beta test of ads on the Messenger home screen worldwide in the next few weeks. Tests of the ads began in Australia and Thailand in January. Unlike sponsored messages, which can only be sent to a contact with whom the advisor has had a previous conversation, ads in the home tab will be auction-based and use the same user-targeted methods as Instagram and Facebook itself. The ads can link out to a website or open a conversation in Messenger. Yay.
I mean, yay. I'm not worried about Facebook making enough money to stay in business these days, so I'm not cheering for them. But I understand that they do need to continue to find ways to monetize their products, and that's fine. Ads aren't my favorite thing, but I'm not one of these people who's like, there's an ad on this. I refuse to ever use it. It depends on how annoying it is and how good it is. And the targeting, I feel two ways about. On the one hand, it's creepy, and I don't like them knowing that much about me. But on the other hand, when it's a targeted ad, it's much more likely to be something I would like to see than a waste of my time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. More targeted. But, God, ads in the middle of chat just, ugh.
it's always the case of, like, is it an ad you want? Then you don't mind it, right? If I am in Facebook Messenger and I constantly am ordering pizza from Domino's and I've been feeling a little bit like, I don't know if I like it anymore. And an ad for Pizza Hut says, hey, click here and order a free pizza from Pizza Hut to try it out. I'll probably be cool with that, right? Because I was going to order a pizza anyway. And hey, free pizza, why not, right? So there are situations I can see where it will be good. It's all about the implementation.
When they talk about the home tab, I don't quite understand a home tab in Messenger.
It's the home screen, basically. I mean, do you use the Messenger app? Back and forth,
are you talking about on mobile?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's the home tab right down there. Boom.
Huh. I never noticed that. So at least it won't be I'm talking to you back and forth about when we're ever going to go to Steak and Whiskey.
Not
and it's
yet.
Going to pop up a
and pop and up an ad for Steak and Whiskey and or open no, table or something. Yeah,
the pizza one.
Yeah, you should eat pizza instead. Also, I want to hearken back to our white space conversation just a second, because Wabbit Magic pointed out that the entire FM band, aircraft and ham radio, is between channels 6 and 7. I mean, it was a bad example for me to use 6 and 7 because there's already stuff there and they won't use it for internet. But that shows you how much space there is between these channels that could be used.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I keep an electrical engineer on staff. And about that, he said when it was analog, there might still have been space, but digital makes use of the bandwidth better.
Yeah, it's more efficient. That makes sense. Thank you. For having that analysis at the ready. Makes perfect sense. XDADevelopers.com notes a feature in Android 7.1 called panic detection. It's not about you panicking. It's about your operating system panicking. It'll return you to the home screen of your Android device if it detects 4 consecutive back button presses with less than 300 milliseconds apiece between them. So something that would be difficult for you as a human to do, but a trick that malware often employs to stop you from exiting a screen while it's doing something malicious. So instead of being able to hijack your screen and stop you from doing anything, Android 7.1 can, and it's not on by default, but it can detect that kind of of action and stop it so that you can then kill processes or whatever you need to do.
It sounds really clever. I get a little more excited when Google works on, or is it Alphabet? I get
this is
lost.
Google. Google does Android.
Google. Okay. When they do things to try to help the root cause, like this in Android 7 is when they're going to be making it possible for the handset developers to upgrade the OS without having to upgrade all the other pieces of it. And so that's working at the root cause of getting people more secure. Hmm. This is sort of a after you've already gotten hacked problem and our solution. And
it's
clever.
This is a kind of malware that says, hey, we can do something that there's no patch for, because you want to be able to use a back button. You don't want to remove the back button. So we'll just start sending back button things, you know? I mean, it's not a thing that you'd want to stop. You don't want to stop apps from being able to navigate, because there's very good reasons and trustworthy reasons to do it. So what this is another countermeasure that says, hey, you know what? We'll be able to stop the malicious use of that while not stopping the legitimate uses of it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
the legitimate uses are mostly accessibility and things like that.
Right, right. All right.
And so this is the patch that you want to happen automatically without having to upgrade the entire operating system.
Right, right. I just like root cause fixes more than I like after the fact fixes. I like to fix the front end first. I think this is a root cause fix
because the malware is doing a thing and this is
stopping. But the malware is already on your device.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the root cause fix in that case would be never have malware on your device. And frankly, that's just not going to happen. There will always be ways that people can get malware on their device if they want.
But you can do more. Well, anyway. All right. Audi announced its first production vehicle with autonomous driving capability. The 2018 A8 will have level 3 capability, which means the car can drive itself in some driving modes, though a human must be ready to take over. The A8 featured a traffic jam pilot that can take over at speeds up to 60 kilometers per hour, which is 37.3 miles per hour, so in traffic. The A8 has more sensors than Tesla's Autopilot uses. Autopilot is considered level 2. The Audi A8 will start at €90,000, which is $103,243 US, coming to Germany in late autumn and the US in mid-2018. And no, Steve, you can't have one.
Aw, poor Steve. I kind of want one too, although it's way out of my price range. But this is actual self-driving car. Now, the Tesla is capable of level 3, so don't get too confused when you're like, wait, I thought the Tesla could totally do this stuff. It can, but it doesn't use all of the sensors. And the autopilot that you hear about requires that constant human interaction to be able to correct for its deficits. And we've covered that quite extensively regarding the fatality associated with the misuse of autopilot. So this is the Audi saying this is actually level 3. Like, this is safe for you to allow it to drive during these conditions. And that's why it's level 3, not level 4, because it's not saying it can drive all the time. But if you're going less than 37 miles per hour and in stop and go traffic, you can just let the A8 take over.
I love the vision of just what would happen in congested traffic on our freeways, that they wouldn't come to a halt because you wouldn't have the little fender benders. We just witnessed one where it was like this little bitty dent from one car to another, but it caused, you know, 3 hours of back. Well, it wasn't true. It's like 15 minutes of backup, but still.
Sure.
I would love to see that go away.
And those accumulate. Right. Because those cars are gone, there's a slowdown. You ever pass those ghost slowdowns? Where you're like, oh, there must have been a wreck here 15 minutes ago, and the traffic just hasn't smoothed over it yet.
And you feel terrible where you're going, well, somebody better be decapitated up here for this time that you wasted of mine. Then you get there and there's nobody hurt.
You feel
even
worse when it turns out you were right. It's a no-win situation for anybody. this is exciting because we are getting our first level 3 production car hitting the road, and I'm certain it won't be the last. I'm curious what the rules will be. I know Congress in the U.S. is working on some national rules for autonomous cars, and it's going to be a little bit confusing about what you're allowed to do in these things. And maybe that's part of the reason this isn't coming to the U.S. until mid-2018.
I absolutely can't wait. Cannot get here soon enough. Bring it on. I'm ready.
Let's talk umbrellas. The South China Morning Post passed along a report from the paper.cn, the paper only in Chinese, South China Morning Post in English, about a startup called Sharing E-Umbrella. Inspired by the success of bike sharing in China, we've talked about it a lot on Daily Tech News Show. Bike sharing is big in China, very successful. Mobike spreading its business around the world. Well, E-Umbrella was inspired by that and began an umbrella sharing service with 300,000 umbrellas across 11 cities in China. In principle, users were supposed to pay a small deposit and would incur a charge of a few cents, essentially, a few yuan. I think it was like 0.50 yuan per 30 minutes of use. Every 30 minutes, you get charged a little more after your deposit. In practice, however, most of the umbrellas just disappeared. Now, I don't know if they were not locking them down well or if the apps failed, but the founder, Zhao Xuping, told the Post he is undaunted. He still intends to make 30 million umbrellas available across China by the end of the year.
I'm sorry. This is just silliness. I mean, umbrellas aren't that hard to carry and have your own. I mean, I have an umbrella that's this big. It fits in my purse. I mean, not like I need an umbrella all that often.
Sure.
But.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Because you don't need an umbrella all that often. Oftentimes you don't have it with you when you need it because there is unexpected rain or you forgot. And so I get where they're going. Like, wouldn't it be great in dense urban areas like these cities in China if there was an umbrella sharing service that was a couple bucks for a couple bucks? Like, instead of having to buy the $5 or $10 umbrella from the guy at the subway who's taking advantage of everybody who forgot their umbrella, there's just an umbrella sharing service. And then you grab the umbrella, and that way you never have to think about it. You don't have to carry it all the time, except
it's silly.
The problem is you don't have rain often enough, and you don't have that situation often enough. And apparently, it's really hard to lock down the umbrellas and keep people from just taking them.
Oh, it's adorable that he tries, though.
But apparently he's going to keep going. Now, you laugh, Allison. This is one of those things where I am not 50% certain that he's going to succeed, but I'm also not 50% certain. I guess I'm 50-50 on it, is what I'm trying to say. Like, this could be one of those things that takes off once he gets it right, and he has to lose 500,000 umbrellas before he can figure it out. Because the idea was, okay, we have to have racks where people can pick them up, right, by the subway stop, and then I guess they keep them at home, and they could tell the app, okay, I'm not using it anymore, but you can't share it out of somebody's home. So they got to fix that. But once they fix that, it might be better than you think. You know, I just don't know that the profit potential is there.
It's also possible that I'm not qualified to discuss this since it hasn't rained in Southern California.
But boy, let me warn you, when it pours, man.
There you go.
It pours. No, and then you're going to need sharing the umbrella. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Let's talk about subscription software versus owning software. And I was joking at the beginning because we're not going to come down ideologically. There are times when subscribing to software as a service makes perfect sense. For instance, you know, cloud storage, cloud document sharing, and things like that make perfect sense. There are times when owning the software makes perfect sense. I don't want to subscribe to my IRC client as a service. I just want to have the software on my desktop. In fact, I would like open source software. But there's lots of places in between, and one that has shifted is image editing. It used to be, yeah, you buy Photoshop for a lot of money, and then you keep that Photoshop until you've run it into the ground, and then you buy the next Photoshop. And Adobe was having problems because it was feast or famine. Everyone buy the new Photoshop, and then they would their earnings off Photoshop would decline and decline and decline until they came up with an upgrade. So there are benefits and costs to both the company and the consumer for both these models. Allison, you have recently been thinking this about this because of Bart talking about it on his podcast.
Yeah, Bart Bouchatz does the fabulous Let's Talk podcast, and one of them is Let's Talk Photography. And in there, he started talking about this question of how do you choose an application for image editing, for example, and that was kind of the focus of it. So Photoshop rental kind of came up in conversation in his monologue on this. And one of the points that he made was that having a sustainable set of income over time allows you to do better software development, that you aren't so focused on, let me just pile gobs and gobs of features that people don't want into an application.
Or instead, the feature that will get people to buy it, but actually doesn't improve the product because it doesn't improve stability or make things easier to use. Those stability and ease of use are often hard sells in getting people to upgrade, but they're the things that might make you more satisfied as a user.
And security of products. So
Most people are pretty good about giving you security updates, whether you're paying or not, but sure, yeah.
These were his points. Mm-hmm. I would agree with what you just said, but he was talking also about the security of these, that if you're always getting updates, you're going to get the security updates. But yeah, you're right. An example would be Office 2011. I mean, it's 6 years old now and they still send out security updates for that.
Yeah.
But Microsoft has gone to a subscription model, and actually in High Sierra, you won't be able to use Office 2011. So I've been forced to go to Office 365, and that made me think about it in that context as well. So I sort of launched off of what Bart said and started a discussion on my podcast about the question. And it's, I don't know that I buy into all of his arguments, because if you talk to people about this, and since I posted it, I've got a lot of conversation going on about it. People are massively, rabidly against subscription models, some of them, but I don't find many people massively, rabidly in favor of them. I find resigned to it. I find, well, it seems like a good price, you know, $10 a month for Photoshop and Adobe Lightroom, that, you know, it's a good deal, but they're not like, it's fantastic, I love it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I noticed the same thing. We were talking about this in our Slack for the analyst level patrons, and the people in favor of it were either reasonably favorable or they were enterprise level, right? And there's a different angle on this if you're talking enterprise. Gadget Virtuoso said, for the company that wants to upgrade at least every other year, the subscription model is the way to go. The cost of Adobe Creative Cloud was almost 3 years if you purchased, so we actually saved money on the subscription model. The CBA for Autodesk is quite similar. If you wanted to upgrade any sooner than every 3 years, subscription was cheaper. You've got lots of different scenarios then when you're talking about a business that has multiple licenses, that has to have certain features to keep up in a competitive marketplace, versus us as individual consumers who are like, my Photoshop's still working fine. It does what I need it to do. Why do I need to upgrade? Don't make me upgrade. Oh, wait, if I'm paying a subscription, I'm being forced to upgrade, and maybe I wouldn't have.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not a Luddite on software. I'm the kind of person who's got to have the newest hotness. You know, I love having the new thing. So I'm not the kind of person who hangs on to old things because I don't want change. There are people like that for whom this is a bad thing too. But I'm starting to see these things where they get worse. I mean, Office 365 on the Mac, Excel on that, it's much slower. It's got all these animations, like when I try to drag things. I mean, it's just got a bunch of stuff I don't need.
But that
need,
would be true if you were paying for it or alone or subscribing, right? That's
but
just
I would
the
have
fact
a choice.
That the older version doesn't work on your operating system right, anymore.
But I would have a choice.
You'd have a choice.
If that were the case.
Between what and what, though?
Well, before they made it where it didn't work, if I had a choice of a standalone version or the subscription model, if I get the subscription model, I can't stay with the old version. If I buy it,
yeah,
I can stay with the old version.
Well, with Office, you can. You can stay with the old model as long as it still works. But subscription or standalone, 2011 just doesn't work in High Sierra. That doesn't.
That's true. That one example. But I use 1Password and Text Expander. And Text Expander, they said, "Oh, Allison, come on, try the subscription model. It's great. You're gonna love it." Well, I don't love it. It's always asking me for network connections. It doesn't find my database. I don't like it as much.
Yeah.
Or 1Password. They went to that. You can still get 1Password standalone, but they bury it, and I think you have to send them an email to get it and that kind of thing. And there's people that don't want their 1Password in the cloud. You can't do it without that now.
Yeah.
So the feature set is changing to things that maybe we don't really want, and that concerns me.
Well, a lot of it has to do with how good the company is at it, right? Subscription is an entirely different way of doing things. And I'll grant you, in the early days of Microsoft Office 365, I was on the verge of wanting to go back to standalone. I liked having access to all the current working versions. I could switch between 2011 and 2013, right? You know, I didn't have to stick with one of them because I had the subscription. I could put it on multiple devices without having to pay extra. That's a huge benefit.
That's really nice.
Right?
Yeah, that's really nice.
It would sometimes, when I was offline, just stop working and say, hey, you need to log in and prove that you're paying for the subscription. And I'd be like, I don't have an internet connection right now. What, I can't use my word processor? It doesn't do that anymore. They've worked out those quirks. But I think that's important when evaluating this is how good is the company at delivering a subscription service version of their software?
I had that exact problem just a few months ago, though, Tom, when we were in, it was either in the Galapagos or Peru, I did try to get on.
I haven't had that happen in years
now. It eventually let me in.
Yeah.
But it gave me a little, you don't have an internet connection. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Well, it just whined. It whined about it.
I'm in an island. So the thing about Photoshop came up specifically because a company called Serif Labs has come out with Affinity Photo, and it's $50 on the Mac or $50 on the PC and $30 on the iPad. And it's real close to a full version of Photoshop. It's not a Photoshop Elements kind of thing. It's really close. They've also got Affinity Designer that I think it's Illustrator that it competes with. And it's a one-time buy. You know, you can buy upgrades. I'm sure eventually they will come out with something, but they just came out with a massive upgrade, 1.5 on the Mac and PC, and they didn't charge for that upgrade. It was huge. So there's a rabid community of people, those who are really angry about having to rent their software, that are flocking over to Affinity. Now, it isn't altogether Photoshop yet, but it's getting really, really close. So it's made the discussion a lot more interesting because there is an alternative.
Well, and I think they're tapping into a very smart market, which is, again, in business, you know you're going to need software for the next 5 to 10 years as long as you're in business, right? So you don't care about a subscription versus paying once. If you're a consumer, you're like, hey, if I lose my job or the kids' college tuition ends up being more expensive than I thought, I'm going to want to cut costs. If I have a subscription and I have to cut that cost, I lose the software. If I can afford to buy Affinity today, then I will buy it and I'll be able to use it until it just doesn't work on my operating system anymore.
Yeah. It's, I feel a little bit like we're getting nickel and dime to death on this. You know, remember, I don't know if you're probably not old enough, but TV didn't used to cost money.
What are you talking about? You bought a TV. You're so nice. Yes, of course I remember when you just had broadcast television and how my grandpa just railed about how dumb it was that my parents were paying for television when there was nothing good on anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there was a brief period where telephone was really inexpensive, and now we pay a fortune per month. I was talking about this on my podcast.
Local calls were inexpensive, but long distance was way expensive.
So. Honey, it's long distance. Yeah, there you go. I was talking about this on my podcast, and George from Tulsa said something great. I had just finished doing my plea for Patreon, and he said, yeah, you know, Patreon's a monthly fee.
It's, yeah, right.
But you have a choice of whether to do it or not, and you still get the content. So there.
Well, and it depends, right? Certain content, it depends on the Patreon too. But
yeah, you get extra stuff. Sure.
There's all different reasons for subscribing. I actually really like subscribing to Office because it's something I know I'm going to need. It's not something that I can afford to do without for various reasons and various other jobs that I do. Even though I use Google Docs for so many things, there are certain Excel files and Word files for contract jobs that I have that I know I'm going to need it. It's a business expense. And it's nice to know that it's just always there and I don't have to go buy it again to put it on a new or a second laptop or a tablet. But that makes sense in my situation. I can see someone else who's like, I've got one computer and I may just be able to switch to Open Office, right? I don't have to use Excel. I don't have a client that requires it. So I want to, or LibreOffice, I want the flexibility. I just want to buy it once.
You know, I don't actually, you're going to find this hard to believe as such an Apple fangirl that I am. I don't resent Microsoft at all for this because you can buy standalone Microsoft Office. They price it in a way that as soon as you're like two people with three devices, all of a sudden it's worth it to do the subscription.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have that trade-off. You can make that choice. It's these companies that say, nope, now you're doing a subscription. That's your only choice. We're not going to let you have it. Then you feel like you're taken hostage. And I think making your customers resent you is maybe not a good feeling. So with the Affinity example, I think when people talk about something that Affinity can't do, people will go, yeah, but it was only $50. I was able to buy it and I don't have a subscription because you're defending the company because you are so happy they haven't got you held hostage. So I think any business model that makes your customers resent you, something to think about, you know? And like I said, I don't resent Microsoft because I have a choice.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're interested in what you think about this as well. You can start a thread in our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can submit stories there that we talk about on the show, or you can email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com like these fine people did. Alan from the cornfields of Southern Illinois. I actually got a chance to talk to Alan at Nerdtacular. We compared which cornfields we're from. Said, when my now wife moved into our new home, I told her I was not climbing on the roof or crawling through the crawl space. I'm more than happy to pay someone younger and less prone to injury to manage those things. I still handle tech support for the family and friends because I enjoy it, and they pay me in beer. In a nutshell, when you're young, money is more valuable than time. This balance tends to change over time. Plus, we don't have these services where I live. And of course, he's talking about Amazon providing the setup services for smartphone stuff, among other things.
You know, there's a book called The Number One Women's Detective Agency by Alexander McCall Smith. And in there, the main character lives in Africa. And she said something I'll never forget. The character said, when you have money, you owe it to society to employ people. And I just all of a sudden you're over the guilt of what he's saying is like, he's older, he's got the money, he can afford to pay somebody. Look, he's employing somebody. It's a good thing.
I don't know if you owe it, but it's I like the spirit of the phrase, which is like, hey, you're actually helping people out. When you do that.
Right. You're helping the economy.
Bill in Huntsville, Alabama said 2 weeks ago, my wife had her pacemaker replaced with her previous unit. We had to transmit the data quarterly by holding an antenna over the pacemaker and placing a call to the manufacturer. The new pacemaker transmits the data to a monitor next to the bed through Bluetooth during the night, and the monitor transmits the data to the manufacturer through a cell tower over the internet. Manufacturer forwards the data to the doctor's office. Boom.
Wow.
I know, right?
Is just so futuristic. It's awesome.
Well, and from his wife's perspective, I imagine it's, I used to have to go through all this trouble, and now it just does it. I don't have to think.
Well, not to mention more often data, right?
Yeah.
That data getting there more often means maybe corrective action faster.
Absolutely.
To keep her alive and happy and healthy. That is so cool. I love it.
And then regarding David's email yesterday, and I try to make this apparent when we get email from people recommending products that are, or not even recommending, but talking about products they tested. David was very careful to say, I'm not recommending these. These are just things I've been playing around with. He did mention LastPass, and a lot of you folks wrote in and talked about how Steve Gibson has been, over several episodes, evaluating LastPass. And I don't think it's unfair to characterize Steve as less than impressed with LastPass. He's got a little ongoing back and forth with him. You can check out the most recent update on Steve and LastPass in Security Now 587 if you'd like to know more about why. But it's just another of what I was saying yesterday of, hey, we're telling you these things so you can go investigate them. And especially when you're talking about password managers, you should be very careful.
Yeah, I think so. I hadn't even heard of LastPass. I haven't listened to yesterday's show yet.
It's a cool idea. And it's actually very similar to Steve's own idea in that it's trying to get rid of passwords. In other words, it will create the password but not store the password. But some of the ways it transmits information probably need to be tightened up, it sounds like.
I see. Okay.
Well, thank you, Allison Sheridan, for joining us, as always. Podfeet.com, if you want to find out more about Allison's thoughts, not just about subscription software, but all kinds of things. You've been doing podcasts there forever, but you're also doing more blog posts over there, I've noticed, which is really cool.
Yeah, I've been really taking off on that. I used to do a single 5,000-word blog post a week, and now I do lots of little blog posts, so which somehow ended up being more work. I'm not quite sure how that worked. But my big thing I'm doing now is this weekend I'm going to Woodstock, Illinois, to MacStock, which is a gathering of Mac fanatics that grew out of the demise of Macworld in San Francisco, put on by Barry Folk and Mike Potter. So anybody who's in the Chicago area, if you aren't going to MacStock or if you're anywhere nearby, it's a fantastic show. I'll be presenting there and it should be a lot of fun.
That's so funny. My freshman year college roommate, Mark Ladd, was from Woodstock, Illinois.
Tell him to show up.
He and I got together. Well, I don't think he lives there anymore. He and I got together recently at a restaurant near LAX because he's got a startup. And it was so cool to get back together with him. So blast from the past, Woodstock, Illinois.
There you go.
So much Illinois on this show. I love it. We even got a little Michigan in earlier. In fact, there's all kinds of cool stuff in the full version of the show, which includes the pre and post show. We were talking about grammar rules and our favorite bugaboos in the pre-show today. If you'd like to have access to that, All you got to do is support the show, patreon.com/DTNS. If you're already supporting and you didn't realize you could do that, go to Patreon and do a search for Get the RSS Feed, or just look for it. It should be usually on the right. Sometimes, depending on your screen size, it might pop over to the left. But there is an RSS feed that is custom for every single supporter of the show, and you get the full pre and post show. It's the only way to get the pre-show for the most part at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 2030 UTC at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. We're at facebook.com/dailytechnewsshow, and our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow, of course, we'll be talking about net neutrality with the Internet Day of Action and Scott Johnson. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Did they pick Woodstock simply so that they could call it Macstock?
No, actually, Mike Potter lives in Woodstock, he came up with the name of it. It's so much fun.
That's cool.
A really, really good time. It's little. Yeah, it's just a few hundred people, but it's just, you know, real community feel.
One of my favorite conferences of all time was Podcasters Across Borders in Ontario, and it was small too. It was, it was just a gathering.
Wait, Ontario, California?
No, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, okay.
It was mostly Canadian podcasters.
Podcast Expo was there.
Yeah, and that's right. I've been to a podcast.
Ontario, California.
I've been to a podcast conference in both Ontarios, actually.
That's right.
But yeah, it was really fun. Sometimes those smaller ones are just better because everybody can spend time with each other.
You can know each other.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I didn't get to go last year because my stupid grandson decided to be born right then.
Well, that
didn't
was rude of him. He could have been born any day. Oh, by the way, I should have mentioned this during the show. I mentioned it on Daily Tech Headlines, but Rich from lovely Cleveland had his baby boy this morning.
Yay!
He's got a bouncing baby boy. I know. So big congratulations to Rich. Of course, Rich Strafalino, if you have heard him fill in for me on Daily Tech Headlines, he actually filled in hosting DTNS for the week that I was at Nerdtacular for that
Thursday.
I
did not make the connection. That was Rich from lovely Cleveland when he did that.
That is Rich from lovely Cleveland. Yeah. Yep. Same Rich.
He started the whole thing, huh?
Yeah.
And so from adjective town.
I'm pretty sure if he wasn't the first, he was the second. Like, he was right there at the very beginning. So yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I haven't been to Showbot lately.
Yeah, so Roger.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you couldn't if
Tom will explain how spiders
work. It wasn't
working
before, so I just
gotcha. Okay. What do we got for titles?
All right, Tom will explain how spiders work. No, Steve, you can't have one. Elon buys back his ex, which is kind of cool. Tom says this could take off. Allison laughs. Microsoft changes the channels just in the panic of time. Audi drives you for $120,000.
In Germany, Audi drive you.
Sharing my umbrella, LLLLA. Rent umbrellas by software.
That's pretty good. Rent umbrellas by software. I like that.
Oh, wow. Everything started shifting, moving.
Got to use that freeze while reading button, man.
I'm reading and it's still freezing. It's still moving. Understand.
Did you press the freeze while reading button?
Yes.
I don't think it should be rent umbrellas by software.
Yes, both ways.
All right. Well,
it's still moving. It's still moving. This doesn't work for me.
Don't panic, Roger.
You're probably blocking the script.
How many? Oh, block your script. I feel like Veronica.
Don't get so mad. Block your script. Oh, it's happening to Poodle Puncher too. So you're not alone. You have to be hovering over it to stop.
Mm-hmm.
What should I hover over?
Freeze while reading.
Oh, freeze while reading.
Yeah, I think that's what.
Because I'm hovering over everything. Okay.
Yeah, but what's the best title, Roger?
Well, it's still not working.
I like Rent Umbrellas by Software. Allison, what do you think?
All right.
That's pretty on subject, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it gets the umbrellas in there. And I normally don't like combo titles, but that one kind of just is really elegant. So
it's usually not authentic if it's a combo.
Yeah, it's usually 2-4, whereas this one's perfect.
Starting with rent umbrellas is confusing, which is always good.
Yeah, it makes you pay attention.
Because if you could start with buy software, then that would you wouldn't read
people
the
people would
the
tune out.
They're
like, yeah, buy software, mm-hmm. fine. They're trying to sell me something. Rent umbrellas,
rent
what?
Umbrellas, what?
But it's not too confusing to where they turn away and go like, I don't know what they're talking about. BioCal says, awesome. Oh no, it's broke. The freeze while reading it, Breton is broke, Roger. So you're not crazy. Well, not because of that.
Well.
Are you suggesting I'm crazy?
I'm not making any evaluative statements.
You know what? I wouldn't
about
argue
your
with
mental
you
health.
At that point anyway. All right. So we're going with rent umbrellas, buy software.
Yes. Although Ken from Chicago, I like rent the gun, buy the cannoli. You know, leave the gun. Take the cannoli. No.
Wait,
right.
What?
Never mind. You don't know that famous quote? Leave the
can't
gun.
Be that famous.
Take the cannoli. Just because that's very famous. People talk about it all the time. Leave the
all
gun,
the
take
time.
The cannoli.
Even when you're in the 15
from The Godfather.
I remember key moments of the
Allison,
film.
Allison, am I crazy?
I didn't see The Godfather.
No! You know what? I have a show for you. I have a show. I'm going to break some news here. I'm going to pull a Scott Johnson.
Oh, no.
And it's because of Scott and I. We're going to start watching the greatest movies of all time and talking about them on Current Geek. So I actually went and I took several different rankings of the greatest movies of all time and I combined them to create an Uber ranking. And we're going to start at the top, which I believe is The Godfather, watch the movie and talk about it on Current Geek.
So movies like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, that kind of movie?
I don't know that one's on there. I'll have to double check.
That doesn't make sense. What kind of list are you looking at?
See, it's the Current Geek Film Fest.
Come on, it's got Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey.
So The Godfather, Casablanca, Citizen Kane, Psycho, Sunset Boulevard, The Wizard of Oz, like that.
Not like Midnight Cowboy?
Midnight Cowboy might be on here.
You know, every year when I was a little kid, when back in the old days, when we had to watch TV real time, The Wizard of Oz would come on once a year. And I always watched it. It was our thing as a family. And one year, my dad said, I was around 10 years old, he said, you know what, Allison? Another show is on a different channel, and I want you to watch it with me. It's the movie Harvey. Have you ever seen that?
And yeah, that was the counter programming to Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, and that's so hilarious. I sat up in bed in his bedroom with my mom and dad's room. We watched it while the rest of the family was downstairs, and that became it means my dad. So in fact, I bought the movie for him later on VHS, and we just watched it the other night with my kids. I let him I let him in on it. And,
that's great. But Wizard of Oz used to be a big deal for us too. My mom would put out snacks, and we'd all sit down and make a big deal out of it when it would come on TV, and it was like, yeah, like you said, it was every year, right?
So when you say Harvey, you mean the one with Jimmy Stewart, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. No spoilers.
I won't. But if you ever see
Webbit
the box,
Magic.
No Webbit spoilers Magic for the 70-year-old movie.
Webbit Magic says Harvey is about my big brother.
Harvey is not on my list, but Midnight Cowboy is.
Huh.
Midnight
but
Cowboy
no one
is
has Urban Cowboy. Does anyone have Urban Cowboy? Legal Eagles?
No, Legal Eagles is definitely not on the list. I can guarantee that. E.T. is on the list.
That's a great...
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Poltergeist.
I like that kind of show of everybody watching together. And it's caused something, an interesting effect. Do you know about... what's the Star Trek podcast?
Star Trek
This
podcast.
Week in Truck?
No.
Oh,
Rod Roddenberry sponsored one. Yeah. Oh, I can't think of the name of it with John and Ken. Anyway, the interesting effect of that is I've had friends of mine say, oh, my God, did you see Star Trek last night?
Right.
Because we're watching the same thing together. It's has created the water cooler conversation. I was at the gym with Dorothy when she said it. And I was on talking to Bart in Ireland once when he said it. And it's just created an interesting effect. Like, oh, man, so when Data, blah, blah, you know, it just made it really fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're trying to do a little bit on Spoiler in Time. Is say like, hey, we're all going to watch these things together and talk about them. We just finished Justified, and we're either going to watch Deadwood or Firefly.
Mission Log.
Log.
Thank you.
Mission Log is the Rod Roddenberry Ken Ray show.
Yeah. You know who's the sweetest guy in the world? Rod Roddenberry.
I have heard that from Ken.
Delightful. Yeah. No, I had I used to have a party at Macworld every year for my fans, and he came one year, and we did a thing where people could call into a Google Hangout who couldn't come to Macworld and could join in the party. And he sat there and talked to them for like a half hour, put on the headphones and talked to him. And then he just kind of left all of a sudden. It was like, okay, whatever, you know, that's fine. And then all of a sudden he comes running back and he goes, oh my God, I forgot to say thank you. Thank you so much. And shook my hand. And he said, man, that's good parenting. And he said, well, no, it's a really good nanny, actually.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Well, no, I feel like I read something recently about him saying that getting back into getting into covering Star Trek is kind of a way for him to feel like he's getting to know his father in a way that he never did.
Yeah, he did a movie.
It was the documentary about it.
Yeah. And I wish they would play that over and over and over again. It was phenomenal. It was so interesting to see him discover what his father meant to people.
Yeah. And he wasn't so much trying to say that, you know, he didn't know his father at all growing up, but he's like, you know, when I was growing up, he was just my dad, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't really take that much interest in what he did. That was his work. Yeah, exactly. And he's like, I was a Star Wars fan. I didn't care what my dad did for work.
They show him with like an R2-D2 cake on one of his birthdays, that kind of thing. So, that was it. I loved that documentary. I felt really bad before it came out. I was talking to him and he was talking about what he was learning. And he said, like, you know, Lieutenant Uhura being the first black officer, you know, that was huge. And I said, man, as I was, you know, what it meant to little girls everywhere. And I said, I always thought of her as the secretary because she answered the phone. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh no, that's exactly what she looked like. It's like, he thought I had this profound meaning. She was always like, you know, the Klingon's online too for you, Captain Kirk.
Well, and that it all depends on the perspective you bring into it, right? Like that's what that shows.
That's what you're expecting to see.
You know, if you're an African-American girl, you're going to say like, wow, a woman who looks like me is up on the bridge of the Enterprise, and that's amazing. And if you're someone like you, who's just seeing a woman, you're like, oh, a woman's answering the phones. That's a totally different perspective.
Yeah, I felt bad. Trek Nation, Steve says. That's what it was called, the movie.
Trek Nation.
They played it like twice, and I don't think you can like get it on Netflix or anything, and you should be able to.
Okie dokie. AT&T supports net neutrality.
Oh, you can buy it on DVD. I did not know that.
Bob's Burgers and Futurama are on Hulu now, in case anyone was worried. Okay, doke. I think I published the show without screwing it up too much. Yeah.
Can happen.
I mean, not too much.
Does that mean I'm dismissed?
No. I'm double checking to make sure that I did it right. Yes, it does look like I did it right. Anthony Lemos has volunteered to spruce up our show notes for us, too, and he's already in there making them look nice. So if you see nicer show notes, thank Ethan Kane, either on Twitter or in chat when you see him. That is it for us on the stream. Thank you all for joining us. Allison,
Fred says Whoopi Goldberg famously said, there's a black lady on TV and she's not a maid.
Right. thanks everybody for watching. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye.
Bye.
Now, patrons, you know that you're still hearing us and no one else is, because Allison has this very important message for you that she's going to tell you right now. Allison, what is your deepest thought for our patrons?
Oh man, this has got to be worth how much money?
Yes.
Oh, I should have had something ready. You
the problem with Allison is she doesn't get that everyone else who I do this to just says something silly and it's over. She's actually trying very hard to give you something profound. Valuable.
Okay. When I was... No, I can't tell that.
Oh, wow. Tell it anyway. Wait, different show. Sorry.
I have not been on Tell It Anyway yet. I was going to save that for that
one. Yeah, she hasn't been doing them lately.
I know.
She's been so busy. I hope she gets back to them, because that would be great.
Oh, I love Tell It Anyway. One day I discovered I'd forgotten to listen for a while, and there were like three stacked up, and it was like finding $20 in your jeans,
yeah,
you know?
Like Christmas.
Yay! Oh, I have laughed harder listening to them than anything.
So good.
And the production quality is amazing.
So there you go. That's Allison's recommendation. If you haven't gone to check out Tell It Anyway from Jenny Josephson, go.
There you go.
Listen to all the back episodes. Anything else before we go?
Got to be something profound.
Something pithy.
I named my dog after a physicist, my cats after computer programmers.
Hmm.
Ada Lovelace and Grace Hopper are the cats,
yeah.
And Tesla's the dog.
I guess that makes sense. Cats are better at programming, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Dogs have a good grasp of physics, though.
I mean, no doubt. Well, the cats can land on their feet, though.
We have named two dogs after Star Wars characters and one after a character from Lost. Basically, my wife names the dogs, and they're all named after TV shows.
I like it.
All right, thanks, patrons. We'll see you later. Goodbye. I don't know why I'm waving. You can't. But I was waiting in case you needed to know that.